This podcast is for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to From Crime to Crime.
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
Everything's fine. Let's jump into it.
Yeah, right. You've been talking for 40 minutes straight before we started recording.
Well, we got all the other stuff out of the way. Now we can just jump right into it. See what I did there for you? I did it for you.
That's funny.
And for the people listening.
All right. Well, do you have any announcements or anything, or are you all good?
I don't have any announcements.
Okay, perfect. So in this episode, we're going to the first week of June in 2007.
June 2007. Okay. It's got to be Brad Paisley, right?
Mm-mm.
Carrie Underwood.
No.
Well,
I'll give you a hint. It was somebody who had like a bunch of hits around 2007, and then you haven't heard from him since.
Not Joe Nichols. Jack Ingram.
Oh, that was a great guess, but no.
Oh, man.
It's Billy Currington.
Billy Currington. Wow, you're right.
Yeah, good direction.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of. That's a good one.
Yeah. So this episode is going to be in North Dakota, which we also have never, I don't think, done a case.
I think we've done one other North Dakota case, I think. If not, we've talked about another North Dakota case.
Yeah, we talked about that one you keep trying to get me to do, and I'm like, nah.
Maybe that's what it was, and that sounds more, that sounds like this podcast. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. Erica, we should do this. Nah. Okay.
Yeah. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about the tragic murder of Anita Knudsen.
Knudsen. Is it not just like Knudsen?
I know. I thought it was too, but every person in every interview says Knudsen, even people related to her that have the same last name.
So. Oh, all right. Well, they're a trustworthy source. I can trust them. I'll go with it.
Yep. I know. I always thought it was Knudsen too, but it's Knudsen.
Well, and given your track record on like pronunciations of things, I was like, oh man.
Yeah.
There's that public school education again, but no, you got it right.
Yeah. Public school. Okay. So Anita was adopted by her parents, Gordon and Sharon, when she was just a baby. And they already had biological children that were grown, but they decided to start over with Anita.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And then they quickly decided to adopt her brother, Daniel, and a sister, Anna.
Oh, wow. So, that's awesome.
Yeah. They had like a whole second family. They just didn't feel like they were done raising kids or they had more love. I don't know their exact reason, but they did.
That sounds like a beautiful reason.
And the kids were extremely close in age and emotionally, like they were really close with each other. And Anita being the big sister, naturally she was a huge influence on her brother and sister. Like they really looked up to her.
Definitely. That makes sense. That's usually how those work.
And everybody agrees that she was not only beautiful, she was insanely sweet, loving and caring. She always rooted for the underdog. She was always smiling, happy, super popular, well-liked. She played musical instruments. She was super smart. She got great grades. Just an all-out wonderful person.
Yeah, seriously. I was going to say, this sounds like a superstar.
Yeah. I mean, it's the usual she lights up a room cliche, but in this case, it was true. You could tell just from pictures of her. She had this gorgeous smile. She was just so happy.
Well,
and they lived in Butte, North Dakota, which has a population of about 70 people. So she had to go to high school about 30 minutes away in another town. So that's why when she graduated high school, it seemed natural to go to Minot for college. It was a bigger city. They had a university there. Like there was nothing in her hometown.
This is also probably why they pronounce it Knudsen.
Yeah. And Minot was only about an hour from where she grew up. So it was still close.
Right.
Because she was extremely close with her siblings and her parents. So that was convenient that she chose to go to college in Minot. Not like it's a huge city. I mean, the population of Minot's only 47,000. So.
Oh my gosh.
Still a small town, but yeah, there's a university there. So.
Definitely a college town. Everything probably revolves around the college there.
Yeah. And Anita wanted to be an elementary school teacher, so she had to go to college.
Anita elementary school teacher. Anybody. Anita elementary school teacher. Anybody want to do it?
Yeah, which we don't recommend.
Being elementary school teachers?
Yeah.
We don't recommend it. My wife is one, but...
I know. That's why we don't recommend it.
It is a very hard path and job.
Yeah.
And just life. So.
But she jumped in head first. In her freshman year, aside from her course load, she took 2 part-time jobs because she wanted to make money and she wanted to live off campus in her own apartment.
Good for her, man.
She didn't want to live on campus.
Willing to hustle. Love it.
Yeah, so she worked a retail job and she worked at a hotel. But she was making a ton of new friends and a lot of people from where she went to school because it was only an hour away. So the natural move is to Minot when you grow up, you know.
Right.
So a lot of people that she went to high school with also moved there. So school and her jobs were going great. She got an apartment off campus, but still pretty close to school. And the apartment that she moved into was a 2-bedroom, and she had a roommate named Nicole Thomas that she went to high school with. They weren't super, super close in high school, but they knew each other. And after moving to Minot, they just both needed a roommate, so they decided to move in together.
Yeah, fair enough.
There was also a friend from high school named Tyler that Anita had gone to prom with, and they were just friends, but Tyler had a pretty big crush on Anita, and he also ended up moving to Minot, and he got an apartment in the same complex as Anita.
Were these intentional things, or they just happened to be? One of those.
We don't know. It seems kind of intentional. Because as far as I can tell, this isn't like a huge apartment complex. They're one-story apartments, like ground floor apartments with 8 units. And I don't know how many buildings there are, but I believe there's only a few.
Yeah, and I'm sure like housing is like tight, but probably not quite this tight.
Yeah. Well, and him moving into the same apartment could have just been a coincidence, but it seems sort of on purpose. He was really close with Anita. Like, he really liked Anita.
Yeah. I mean, and given like they've had some history of going to prom and stuff together, he knows her, like it doesn't seem like it'd be totally just coincidental.
Yeah. But either way, she's thriving. So the first weekend in June, Anita talked to her mom, Sharon, on Friday, just like a normal casual call like you would talk to your mom. Then when her mom called on Saturday, Anita didn't answer the phone. And her mom assumed she was at work or hanging out with her friends or something. She assumed that she would just call her back later. But what her mom didn't know either was that Anita didn't go to work on Saturday, which was not like her.
Yeah, that's...
She would never no call, no show to work.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is probably a pretty big deal for somebody who's so on top of their game like she has been known to be, like, to just not show up. Like, that's totally not her MO.
Right. But her mom didn't know that at the time. So on Sunday, her mom tried calling her again a couple times throughout the day and still no answer and no call back from Anita. So by Monday morning, her mom, Sharon, tells Gordon, her dad, to drive to Minot and check on her. She's like, you got to go.
Yeah.
Now.
Fair enough.
So he heads the hour or so drive to Anita's apartment on 4th Street. When he gets there, he sees Anita's car out front. So he's like, oh, okay, she's home. But he goes to the door and nobody answers.
Man.
And he tries the handle, but it's locked. So he decides to go to the apartment manager so that he could ask her to let him into Anita's apartment so he can see what's going on. And the manager was like, I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah.
You know, legally, I'm not sure I can let you in there. And he's like, well, you have to. I can't get a hold of my daughter. You got to let me in. So they were kind of going back and forth. And about that time, a maintenance man came in from the apartment complex. The maintenance man walked into the manager's office and said he found a sliced window screen out in the yard. It turns out that that window screen was from Anita's bedroom window.
Oh, man. Does the dad know that right then? Like, does he hear this?
Well, they go to look.
Oh, okay.
And that's when it turns out it's from her bedroom window. And so when her dad and the maintenance man get to the bedroom, her dad looks in there and he sees her laying on the bed.
Oh, no.
When he reached in the window, because there was no screen on it, and he touched her, she was cold.
Oh, no.
So at this point, he tells the apartment manager, like, unlock this door now. I don't give a shit what you're legal.
Yeah.
Let me in there.
Absolutely.
But once they get inside the apartment, there was no sign of anything disturbed in the house. Like, it didn't look like a ransacked robbery or anything like that. But when he got to Anita's room, her mattress was kind of soaked in blood.
Oh,
and she
God.
Was just wearing a bathrobe and she was face down, keeled over in her bed. And when he checked, she was clearly deceased.
Oh my God. His heart just must be like in shambles.
Her entire family is devastated. Yeah. Her parents are in total shock and they can't think of anybody that would want to hurt their daughter. Everybody loves her. And Sharon gave an interview I'm pretty sure it was to Crime Watch Daily. I can't remember for sure. But she gave this interview and she said it was really hard for her to come to terms with this, and that she kept thinking about how when they adopted Anita as a baby, they had to go to court and promise the judge that they would love her and protect her forever. And she feels like she didn't do that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Her brother, Daniel, and her sister, Anna, you know, they were younger than Anita, and they were completely devastated.
Yeah, I bet. How old are they again right now?
I think Daniel was only slightly younger than Anita, and then Anna was slightly younger than Daniel. They were all very close. But they have to still be in high school because Anita is barely 18.
Right.
And just left for college. So they have to still be in high school at this point. But this wrecked their family, and they had to find out what happened to her and who could have done this.
Absolutely. I mean, that justice needs to be served. I mean, someone like this who's so young and vibrant, who's, you know, just a positive influence in everybody's life. Like,
yeah,
everyone's wanting this person to get caught.
Mm-hmm. So when the police arrive, the investigation starts and they comb the scene and perform an autopsy. And it is determined that she was killed likely sometime Sunday morning. So her dad found her Monday morning, so about 24 hours before. And she had been stabbed multiple times in the chest with a pocket knife.
Dude, that's even worse. There's just something about it being like just a everyday kind of tool like that yeah, to me just makes it that much worse.
Yeah. They actually find this cheap ass pocket knife at the foot of her bed. They find the murder weapon in her room.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. But the motive for her murder is not so obvious.
Totally unknown. Yeah.
There was no signs of robbery or sexual assault.
Oh, I was certainly thinking that there was at least going to be like a sexual assault.
No, there was no signs of anything. Just a murder.
Wow.
Yeah. So at this point, the police are trying to figure out, well, who would want her dead? Does she have any enemies? Everybody loves her. And they start interviewing anyone who had ever known her, pretty much. People from high school, coworkers, neighbors, friends, even her roommate, Nicole, who was out of town that weekend. She was at her parents' house. So she said she didn't see or hear anything or anybody because she wasn't at home. But then the police start to notice Tyler, the prom date from high school.
Yeah, I was already thinking about him.
Yeah. The one that moved into the same apartment complex. He was kind of always around, but now after the murder, he was extra around. Even while the crime scene was active, he was like right there.
What?
Well, I mean, he lives in the complex, so.
Yeah, I know, but like crime scene's active and he's like over there hanging out.
Yeah. Yeah, he was there. But when they interviewed him at the crime scene, because they were like, well, if you're here, let's ask you some questions. He knew exactly to the minute the last time that he had talked to her.
Oh.
And that made them extremely suspicious because they were like, why do you know that? He explains it that when he found out that something had happened to her, he went back to his apartment and checked his phone and his chat logs and all that kind of stuff. And because he wanted to know when the last time he talked to her was, which.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I don't completely hate it. I will say that.
Right. But he also made a Facebook page in her honor, and he would make tribute videos of her on YouTube. It was just kind of a lot.
Tribute videos on YouTube? Really?
Yeah, like just 20-minute long videos with just
like a slideshow and stuff.
Rolling. Yeah.
Yeah, that's uncomfortable.
And it'd be one thing if he was like her BFF, but everybody agreed they weren't that close. Like they went to prom together, but they weren't like best friends.
It'd even be one thing if he made one slideshow for the service, put on YouTube, whatever, moved on. Okay, cool. But like to make several of them, that's suspicious.
But he did say that she was his best friend.
Oh.
He may not have been her best friend, but she was his best friend. And he's been pretty clear about that even to this day, that she was his only friend back then.
You're my best friend.
Yeah. Well, you're my best friend too. Let's see how that works both ways.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's okay. I mean, sometimes somebody is somebody's best friend, even though you're not their best friend. That happens.
Totally.
And that seems to be what happened in this case, that she was his best friend and he definitely had a crush on her. He clearly admits that. But he knew that she did not feel the same way about him. But she was nice to him.
Sometimes that's the worst thing to be, but.
Yeah, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. So his actions are borderline obsessive. But Tyler does voluntarily give an interview to the police at the scene and then later at the police station. And he voluntarily gives his DNA.
Okay. Doing everything right so far.
And he isn't the only suspicious person that they come across.
Who else do they come across that's suspicious? I mean, at least this suspicious.
Well, a witness that morning says that she saw a man running away from the scene on Sunday morning and called it in to the police and was like, this is weird.
Oh.
So they release a description of this man and they drop a sketch, a very good sketch, which is surprising because sometimes they're not so great.
Especially in a small town.
Yeah. And this guy calls in and he's like, hey, I'm the guy in the sketch.
Oh, wow. Was it Tyler?
And they're like, why were you running away from a crime scene? And he's like, I wasn't. I jog every morning. That's my normal route.
Wow.
And they checked it all out and all of the alibis and everything. He was a jogger that jogs that route every single morning. So the witness just saw a guy jogging.
Kudos to that guy. I probably would have gone the other way even if I hadn't done it. Be like, no, I'm not getting involved in this at all.
I know. I don't know that I would have called, but.
God, could you imagine just looking at yourself and seeing like a sketch of you as like a wanted person? It's like,
Oh, man.
Okay.
Yeah. Most eyes are still on Tyler, you know, as the investigation goes on. Most people are still kind of real suspicious of Tyler.
I think that sounds probably fair.
Yeah, but there are other rumors and things that come up in her case.
Like what? What else is there that they could come up with? I mean, who else could they have found that would even have access to her? Because it makes sense, too, that if there was not a struggle, she might have known the person.
Well, it turns out after digging further, Anita and her roommate, Nicole, were not getting along super well.
Uh-huh.
There were a few things that had happened that made Anita pretty uncomfortable. She had told some friends that Nicole had guys over one night that Anita didn't know. And then Nicole left the apartment and left those guys there with Anita alone.
Oh, yeah, that's uncomfortable. I mean, that's uncomfortable in any scenario of anybody. Like, if I was at a place and my roommate just peaced out and just left their two friends that I had no idea who they were, I'd be like, I don't know you guys. You need to leave.
Right. So she had told people that she didn't really feel safe living with Nicole, that just stuff like that was not great. And they'd gotten into a few arguments, something about a fish tank being left on. And they were just kind of looking to move out. They weren't getting along as roommates. And on top of that, the day of Anita's funeral, the police asked Nicole to come in for an interview, just like they asked everybody else, Tyler, the jogger, you know, everybody else that they could think of. And apparently her mother, Nicole's mother, got real nasty with Anita's mom at Anita's funeral.
Oh.
About the police questioning her daughter. First of all, this is not the time or the place.
Right. That's what I was thinking. Like, look, you want to hash this out. Okay. But not here.
Yeah.
Not now.
But secondly, they're interviewing everybody. They interviewed Anita's own parents.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they interview her roommate? That was kind of weird.
Good point.
So that kind of turned everybody off. They were like, eh. But none of this really leads to anything. And the investigation slows way down. Almost to a crawl. There isn't anything except rumors and speculation for a long time. I mean, it's a small police department, and there was a lot of rumors about them not being qualified to handle something like this.
I was going to ask if they, like, were outmatched for what was transpiring.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like maybe they might have been, and, like, understandably so, man. Like, this is a big deal. But also, it's a small town. How many people could they, you know, could it have been?
And outwardly, they say they're doing everything they can. But there's a lot of rumors that suspects are giving DNA samples and they're not being run. Or there's nothing to run them against because they didn't do the samples from the crime scene. Right? You know, there's a lot of rumors. But the one thing that is true is suspects gave their DNA and nobody was ever cleared or charged. So it's, I mean, if they were running the samples, why wouldn't people be being cleared?
Good point.
You know?
Yeah.
Another rumor and suspect that comes up over the years was that maintenance man that found the screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was one of very few people who had keys to that apartment. And he was also the boyfriend of that apartment manager.
Oh, what?
Yeah. And about a year and a half after Anita's death, he committed suicide. And that led to a bunch of speculation that he was
suspicious.
Involved in
the murder. Yeah, dude. Yes. I mean, because I think no matter what, we can agree, it looks like whoever killed her, it was in the front, so it didn't surprise her. She must have known him because there was no other like sign of a struggle other than the bedroom, right?
Yeah. I mean, but there was the cut window screen and the window screen was in the yard.
Yeah. So it could have just been in the bedroom. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But the suicide is really what sparked the rumors about this guy. But the police say that they interviewed him. They checked into his alibi. They know him pretty well and they didn't think he was involved. And years later, there's a whole bunch of other things that were probably contributing factors to what he ended up doing that had nothing to do with Anita. So this goes on for years. Small town rumors, gossip, but nothing as far as real progress in the case. And Anita's family is devastated, but they're trying to move forward. They're good people, you could tell, and they're just trying to go on with their life, but trying to figure out a way to find answers, but still also live their life.
Yeah.
But her brother Daniel struggled real hard with the loss of his sister.
Well, they were really close, right? Like the closest of the in age as well. So yeah, I can understand that. That's a big, big loss.
Yeah. Their mom, Sharon, describes it as he just was running, just constantly running in motion, angry. Mm. He started to get into drugs after Anita's murder. And by 2013, 6 years after Anita was murdered, there were still no answers on her case. And Daniel ended up committing suicide.
Man, I kind of saw something like that coming. I looked her up once we started talking about it and I saw something about him. I saw that he was deceased in 2013. And I was hoping it was just a different guy by the same name. Ah, man, that is terrible. Like,
yeah.
And the grief that he must have lived with was just so much.
So like in a sense, Anita's killer really took two kids.
Yeah, that's it. Honestly, good point.
And took Anna's siblings. I mean, that was her brother and sister.
Absolutely.
So as the years go on, it seems like there's less and less chance that the Minot police are ever going to solve this because nothing ever happens. But the family over the years has reached out and worked with reporters and TV shows trying to get the word out. And the rumors kept coming up about the police bumbling this. But in 2016, they gave a statement, finally, publicly, that said that they had tested every DNA sample against DNA from the crime scene and that they have not gotten a match.
How come it took them so long to even test it, like to do anything with it?
Well, this is when they publicly addressed that they had tested it. Sorry, they're saying that's they tested it right away.
Okay, yeah. Cool. That's what I meant, the public part. But okay, I gotcha.
Yeah, so they're pretty much just saying, look, we've been keeping our cards close to the vest, but we're doing everything we can to solve this. We're trying to solve this. They also say in that interview that they have believed from the beginning that the screen was cut after the crime.
Oh, really?
Because there was blood on the slit on the screen. So the knife was already bloody when the screen was cut.
Well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Why would you like do that?
To make it look like somebody broke in through the window.
Yeah.
But that's why they've always focused on people that knew Anita instead of the random break-in theory or a random serial killer.
Got it. They
always focused on people who knew Anita because they knew it was somebody who she would have either had to let in or had a key to the apartment.
Okay. That makes more sense because I was kind of thinking like, why didn't she run out of the room? Like she heard someone coming through the window. She just froze. But no, they came in through a different way and then they left. I get it now.
But the fact that the front door was locked when her dad got there. It almost seems like whoever did do this did have a key that she didn't let them in. They had to have had a key because they had to lock it behind themselves on their way out.
Well, I think either way, they weren't in a hurry, right? Whether she opened the door for them and let them in and then locked it, or whether they did it after they came in and left or whatever. Like, either way, it doesn't sound like they were really in a hurry.
No, but if the person had a key to the apartment, that severely narrows down.
Yeah, that's true. For sure. Definitely.
Because only a few people had keys to the apartment.
At this point, do we know if she's given the key to anybody? I know she's bringing dudes over that and like letting them hang out, but do we know? We don't know. Okay.
That's all they know.
Oh, okay.
But Anita's parents couldn't deal with that. Just nothing.
Thank
forever.
God. I thought this was the end of the story and I was like, man, like that's it. But
well,
I'm
it would have
more.
Been. If we did this episode 2 years ago, that would have been the end of the story.
Oh, now I'm super interested. Let's get to the end of this.
Yeah, so in early 2022, the TV show Cold Justice was brought in. I don't know if you've ever seen that with Kelly Siegler. She's a prosecutor.
She's been They've been to CrimeCon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's on Oxygen. It's a show where they go and they go to these small towns with cold case murders and they reinvestigate it, like from the beginning, and see if they could shake anything loose or whatever. Well, they came to town. They pretty much go through the whole thing with the police, and they brought in resources that the police didn't have. And Wednesday, March 16th, 2022, the prosecutors gave a press conference that said that they arrested her roommate, Nicole Rice.
What? No way.
For her murder. Yeah.
Really? Hell yeah. No kidding. Her roommate. Wow. Yeah.
After 15 years, 34-year-old Nicole Rice was charged with Anita's murder. And police say that her DNA was the only suspect DNA that couldn't be excluded. And the DNA is a little sketchy because it was such small amounts. And back in 2007, DNA testing was not as sensitive as it is now. So they didn't have enough to do, like, to generate a profile to put into CODIS, but they had enough for side-by-side testing. And her side-by-side suspect DNA was the only one that couldn't be excluded.
Oh,
that was
wow.
found on the murder weapon.
Wow.
Along with witness statements from people who knew her before the murder and after the murder, saying that she was very vocal about how much she hated Anita and that they weren't getting along. And there was a witness that came forward just recently that said that she got drunk at a party and confessed. And then he tried to get her to confess when she was sober and she wouldn't.
Oh, wow.
So,
dude, and this goes to show you, like, you know, with like DNA, like with what it is now, like how it's, you know, able to uncover, like you hear a lot more of these stories about someone who's not necessarily a crazed, cold-blooded murderer, but they do it in the heat of, you know, heat of the moment kind of a thing. And they're like, oh my God, what do I do now?
Yeah.
This is a really interesting case. And I'm glad that DNA was able to solve this.
Well, she hasn't gone to trial yet, but I'm not done.
Oh, okay.
We're not over.
Sorry. I just get so happy when there's at least talking about a resolution.
I know. So with this new investigation and reopening interviews and things like that, they find out that their relationship had been pretty toxic, which they knew from the beginning, but they didn't know how toxic. Like, it was bad. There was a lot of arguing. There was an allegation that Anita really hated her fish tank. Nicole's fish tank, I guess, made like a really loud noise. And so she unplugged it one day and then Nicole's fish died. And apparently she flew off the handle about that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And a couple of times their arguments had gotten physical, not really bad, but just like slamming doors. And there was one story about Anita's foot getting slammed in a door. You know, it just wasn't a good living situation. They hated each other.
That, man, like, that's crazy though. Like,
and at these new interviews, her original alibi kind of fell apart. Her original alibi was that she was at her parents all weekend, but then over the years that changed. Then she was at a bar. She never went back to the apartment. She did go back to the apartment on Saturday. She watched a movie at her aunt's. It just went off. Like, she's given so many alibi stories, you can't even keep them straight. And none of them are the same.
That's crazy that you would like change up your alibi. I mean, you would think you'd get like one basic alibi and just kind of stick to it, you know? Like,
yeah, no. She's given multiple alibis.
Well, I mean, thank goodness.
And then,
goodness,
like I said, but with all the rumors of people saying that she confessed when she was drunk, they had a pretty strong circumstantial case. The DNA is like a bonus, but I don't know if that's going to hold up because of it's not conclusively her DNA.
Wow.
You know, she just can't be excluded. So I don't know if that's going to hold up, but it's a pretty strong circumstantial case.
I mean, yeah.
But she was arrested on March 22nd, and she was held on a $120,000 cash bond or a $250,000 surety bond. This is kind of upsetting to some people because she does have a prior history of skipping bail.
Oh.
And not showing up to court.
Really?
She's had a few other charges in the past that she maybe does, maybe doesn't show up, and then she doesn't. She got charged with that. Anyway, either way, they gave her bail. And within a few hours of that bail hearing, she posted bail and was released.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And her lawyers argued that she has a daughter and she's married now, so she has significant ties to the community. So far, she has shown up to all of her court dates, all the preliminary hearings, everything. You know, all the hearings where they try to get the evidence thrown out and dismissed. That's why I was saying about the DNA evidence. Her lawyers argued that it's not her DNA. It's just she's not excluded. And so they tried to get the DNA evidence thrown out, but as far as I can research, it's still in.
Interesting. Well, at least she's showing up. I mean,
yeah.
That's half the battle, right? Like, you never know. So,
uh-huh.
But
she actually has a court date tomorrow April 4th to go over jury questionnaires that will begin jury selection, and her trial is set to start July 17th.
Okay. Wow. So this is all happening really soon. So we should have more like news and update in the next few weeks about what's coming up with this.
Yeah, this is kind of an active case, and I'm interested to see if they have anything else at trial, because it's been speculated for years that she had something to do with it and all these rumors and everything. But for them to have enough to feel like they can charge her after all of these years, I want to know what else they have.
I'd love to know, too. I mean, this is a really interesting case. So thanks for picking this one. This one was super like enthralling.
Well, the thing that caught my eye about this one was that normally when a case is solved after 15, 20 years, 30 years with DNA, it's usually a man.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point, too.
And it's usually a one-off where it's like, oh, yeah, he's a great pillar of the community. Who would have ever thought he killed somebody in his 20s, you know? And this one was a woman. And I was like, whoa, that it caught me off guard.
Yeah, because usually that's just kind of how it goes, right? It's usually men who are out here doing right. horrific things. So,
well, and the type of DNA that they get is usually pretty specific to a man.
Yeah. That, well,
it's usually semen, because it's usually sexual assault.
I did miss that at first, and then I kind of put it together. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I got it.
But I'm wondering if the original evidence wasn't mishandled a little bit, because how do they only have trace amounts of DNA on the murder weapon? I mean, that was a very personal, a small knife. She had to have handled it, or the killer
had. It doesn't necessarily have to be hers, though, right? I mean, like, that could be a pocket knife that was in a junk drawer that was a common place. Maybe it was hers, maybe it was somebody else's, maybe she found it. I can understand why there's trace, because it doesn't necessarily have to be hers.
Well, I understand, but like, how did the murderer not leave more DNA? It was such a personal attack.
Yeah, well, when you live there and you leave your hair behind, then no one's going to question it, right?
Yeah, maybe that was just the only DNA that they could tie to the actual. Because, yeah, you're right. Her DNA would be all over the apartment. Yeah, I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
None of that would count. It would have to be something related to the actual crime scene, like the window screen or under Anita's fingernails or the knife. It would have to be something related to the actual crime, yeah.
I wonder if the woman who called in the jogger running away was the roommate who saw him and went, oh, this might be something that would work for me, and him be like, hey, that wasn't me. I was on a jog.
I don't know. I never thought of that.
Well, that's what I'm here for.
I mean,
I'm here to solve murders and mysteries and things like that.
Yeah, I don't know. It could be, but anyway, so this is going to be a pretty interesting trial to watch, though, I think.
Yeah, it really sounds like it. I'm really interested.
I'm really into watching trials.
There's
lately.
Been a lot going on in the world, so I can understand why you are interested in trials. There's trials everywhere that are kind of really important.
Oh, I know. It started with that psycho guy in Wisconsin that ran over the people at the farmer's market.
Yeah.
Or the Christmas parade. Forget his name. Daryl Brooks. It started with that guy. I watched every minute of that trial. That was crazy.
I didn't watch the trial, but I know what you're talking about. That was a wild thing. I mean, he just drove through a farmer's market. Like, that's, you know.
Or was it a Christmas parade? I don't remember, but it was really sad.
Was it
I think it was a Christmas parade.
You're right. I do.
Yeah.
Okay.
But either way, that guy was such a Looney Tunes. That trial was ridiculous.
No doubt. Of course.
But ever since then, it's been like just trial after trial with Adam Montgomery and that Taking Care of Maya trial. And
yeah,
it's just been one after the other. Now I'm going to have to watch this trial.
Yeah, I do nothing but watching trials.
That's what I'm saying, which is good. That means people are getting justice. But
yeah, there's another case that's going to trial that I'm really interested too. If you remember, it's the case of the donut thief. Do you remember that one?
No.
It's the one that has all those holes in it.
Yeah.
Woo! I did it. Came back strong.
You finally remembered a dad joke.
That's remembered a dad joke.
Good one.
Thank you.
Good one.
I thought so too. It's all in delivery too, because that's not how the joke was written, but it's all about the delivery.
Yeah, you really worked it in there with the trial thing. I know. I liked that. I figured you had to have adjusted that.
Thank you. Yeah, I did. I did kind of.
That was good.
I tried. All right. That it?
I think so. I don't have anything else, so.
All right. Well, hey, this one was really interesting. I really enjoyed this case. A lot of twists and turns, and I'm glad that there was an ending, because the way you played it off, there wasn't going to be one. And boom, you surprised me. You know what I like.
Well, and I have to kind of trick you on stuff. Like, I'm not trying to trick anybody else, but I want you guys to know I have to kind of tell stories in a certain way to keep Grant interested.
There is a chance that sometimes I get distracted occasionally. It's happened.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Yes.
And I understand, like, I could have started this case with, there was an arrest and this is great, but then Grant wouldn't have paid attention to the whole case. So I have to tell stories in a way that he pays attention through the whole thing.
And I did, and it was wonderful, and I'm glad that you told it that way, because I listened to the whole thing.
Yep.
And I think I might have solved it, because that was definitely her roommate who called in the police report about the guy jogging. Yeah, maybe. 100%.
Allegedly.
Check phone records.
In your opinion.
Or okay. Whatever the case may be. Yep, allegedly and all that. Hey guys, if you like this case or any of the other ones, or how Erica tells the story, or anything that we got wrong, come to our Instagram at FromCrimeToCrime and tell us about it. We'd love to chat with you more there.
All right. Well, I'm going to get going. I love you.
Sounds good. I love you too. Bye.
Bye.
This podcast has been a production of Orange Halo Media LLC, hosted by Grant and Erica. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. To chat with us, go to From Crime to Crime on Instagram, From Crime to Crime on TikTok, From Crime the Number 2 Crime on Twitter, or you can visit our website at FromCrimeToCrime.com. See you next Wednesday.